As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Hi there, this is The Athletic FC podcast weekend preview. It is match day 32. Hi there, everyone. Back again. It is Adam Leventhal, and alongside me is John McKenzie. How are you?
Hello.
Is that it? Just a
yes.
Hello?
Yes.
How are you? You good?
Yeah, I'm okay. How are you?
I'm very well. We are recording remotely for this podcast edition because we had to take in every last moment of this bumper Premier League midweek match day session. And it is good to be able to sort of chew it over with yourself, John. Mark Critchley is here as well. How are you, Mark?
I'm good, thank you, Adam. How are you?
Very good. Very good. It was a busy evening for Manchester United, wasn't it, on Thursday?
Slightly busy. Most of the games are quite busy now. You might have noticed that they concede about 50 shots a game or something. Yeah, so busy on both ends, if you like. And certainly that was a game that just defined and typified the way that United are playing at the moment.
Yeah, we'll get stuck into Chelsea 4, Manchester United 3 on this show, of course, and kick ahead to the weekend against Liverpool once again. Andy Jones is here as well to make up our trio. How are you, Andy?
I'm very good, thank you. Very good.
Excellent. It's good to have you on board, ready for a big weekend. Let's run you through the fixture formation. It's a 7-3 Saturday-Sunday setup. Saturday, 12:30. All of these times are British summertime, just to let you know if you're listening around the world. Palace against Manchester City. That's at 12:30. Then you've got 5 3 o'clocks on Saturday. Villa against Brentford. Fulham, Newcastle. Luton, Bournemouth. Wolves against West Ham. And then the Sean Dyche derby. Everton against Burnley. Then at 5:30, it's Brighton-Arsenal. Then on Sunday, back to Old Trafford, back to Manchester United hosting Liverpool. But obviously this time it is in the league. Then it is Sheffield United against Chelsea at 5:30 and Spurs Forest at 6. A little bit quirky. Right, let's get stuck into the action. So after everything we've seen this week, this is how we look at the top of the table. Liverpool top with 70 points, Arsenal 68, Manchester City on 67. And we're going to start the show by looking at the leaders who go to Old Trafford for a fixture that we witnessed just, 3 weeks ago in the FA Cup, that 7-goal thriller won by Manchester United, Amad Diallo scoring in the last minute of extra time. Neutrals will obviously be hoping for a similar scoreline on Sunday, another sort of spectacular clash. Both of these teams played on Thursday night. United, as we mentioned, lost 4-3 against Chelsea in just a crackers game at Stamford Bridge. In terms of where you see this, Mark, was that the worst possible way for United to prepare for such an important game at the weekend?
Well, it's certainly not the best possible way. I think, look, it's the way that we expect United to lose at the minute. It's the way that we expect them to play. There's this frenetic pace. There's this absence of control. There are moments of brilliance. But they live at the margins. They rely on whether they score as many of the shots that they have and produce more than the opposition put all the shots that they get away. That's these insane games that we've been seeing. That's the story of them. And in that respect, it probably isn't that different from the Liverpool FA Cup game that we had 3 weeks ago, right? It was just that they fell on the wrong side of the margin this time. I think, look, last week, Ten Hag said that United games are becoming like tennis matches. And he said, you know, if you want to go and watch a tennis match, go to Wimbledon. But like watching that game last night, I could have been sat there with a bowl of strawberries and cream because it was a tennis match. It was a basketball match. It was a great football match at the same time as an entertainment spectacle. But playing in this style is not a way to achieve consistent results. And you look at the position that United are in now heading into this game. 9 points off Tottenham in fifth. They're 11 behind Villa. They've got a game in hand. But I had a look on Opta's supercomputer this morning and it was coming out with about a 5% chance of either finishing fourth or fifth. If they lose this weekend, you can see that quickly approaching zero, right? If Villa and Tottenham's results go the other way. So the place United are in at the minute, you could make an argument that they're really quite lucky to be sixth, never mind looking further up the table. I mean, Chelsea were 12th at kickoff last night. They're now 10th. The 5 points behind United with a game in hand. He used to say United are going to finish as high as sixth by the time it all shakes out. That's just the place that they're in at the minute, a chaotic team that you never know what to expect, apart from the fact that it's probably going to be entertaining.
And John, just put into context the statistic that everyone has now seen, that Manchester United this year have conceded the most shots of any team, which is 225.
You know, we spent a lot of time talking in the last few days about the game versus Arsenal and Man City compared to the Manchester United versus Chelsea game, one being very entertaining, the other one not. The reason why one game was entertaining and the other one wasn't is because one game was between two teams who are very good at stopping oppositions from generating chances. So Manchester City and Arsenal have conceded 98 for Man City and 77 shots for Arsenal. So if you want to do well, if you want to be consistently near the top of the table, what you have to do is stop oppositions from having chances. And there are people who've been arguing, well, Manchester United's expected goals per shot conceded is third lowest in the league. What I would say to that is that yes, it is, but that, you know, the actual variance between those different values is very small. So it goes from between, I think, 0.08 for Arsenal per shot conceded, which is very low. It's much lower than everyone else anyway. And then I think around 0.12 for Villa. So what we're talking about here is a difference between quantity versus a difference between quality, because over 100 shots, Manchester United will be conceding on average around, I think it's 10 expected goals. Now, the league average is around 11 expected goals. So they are conceding, when they are conceding 100 chances compared to the rest of the league, they are conceding slightly less expected goals in total. But the problem is that they're conceding, you know, they've conceded 100 shots more than the next closest team in the top five, which is, 100 shots at 0.1 is again, another 10 expected goals. So yes, they're saving one expected goal across 100 shot samples compared to Spurs, for example. But because they're conceding 100 shots more, that means they're putting up 10 XG more in the same sort of time period as well. So this is a problem. And whichever way Erik ten Hag wants to look at it, if you consistently concede these kind of chances, these number of chances, you're going to get punished in the Premier League because the quality that is on offer in the league is such that, you know, you don't need to generate huge amounts of great chances in order to score lots of goals. So yeah, lots of problems for Manchester United here.
And Mark, is this just an issue of personnel at the moment, especially in defence, because they've got clear issues going into the game against Liverpool, but they've been struggling for consistency in that defensive line all season, haven't they?
Yeah, so obviously last night you saw Raphael Varane come off with an injury for the second game running. You saw Johnny Evans come back from injury, come on at halftime as a substitute, play 15 minutes and then have to go off himself. So those two will now be a doubt for Liverpool on Sunday. You've already got Victor Lindelof and Lisandro Martinez confirmed this week out for a month. So that really leaves United in the centre of defence with just two options, Harry Maguire and Willy Kambwala, who is the 19-year-old French centre-back who I thought actually came on and acquitted himself quite well last night, as much as anyone did. United have had, I think it's 11 different centre-back partnerships this season that have started games. I saw a stat as well that starting partnership of centre-backs has only finished 9 of 30 games this season. That's the lowest in the league of any team. So you're seeing, whether it's injury or the need to rotate, players are having, you've got inconsistency at the base of that defence. And I think that explains partly why they've been conceding so many shots as well this season, right? If you don't have that stability and that trust in the relationships. United's injury problems have been something that have been consistent all season. They have affected defence a little bit more than other areas of the team. And I think it's a multifaceted problem. You know, there's been a lot of attention this week and a lot of talk about Erik ten Hag's training sessions. And we know, I think, from our own reporting on The Athletic as well, the training sessions are hard. Players talk about it. The day after games, those who haven't played have to come in and work in an extra hard session, a recovery session. I'm putting it in air quotation marks. It doesn't sound like much of a recovery to me. It's a bigger question, United's injury crisis, but it's one that's been consistent throughout the season. And yeah, it's a real, it's going to harm their chances of making a positive end to the season because they just simply don't have that consistency in personnel.
In terms of what we're hearing, or there are sounds around how Jim Radcliffe is feeling about what he is seeing on the field, what's your understanding of it? Do you think that this is just a sort of a slow burn towards Erik ten Hag just picking up his cardboard box, clearing his desk, and then they move on to someone who they actually really fancy? Or do you not think it's quite as clearly defined as that?
I think it's still a little early to say it's clearly defined and to say that any sort of decision has been definitively made. But look, what I would caveat with that with saying is that think about how we were feeling like 3 weeks ago after the Liverpool quarterfinal game. I remember doing a podcast, coming on this podcast, and we were talking about all the reasons why Ineos might want to keep Ten Hag. You know, at that point, United were feeling very positive. It was probably the most positive United have felt about the season all season. And he had that kind of 2 week period of grace, if you like. But and now the feeling is very different, right? Just two games since then, and it's completely flip reversed. I think that in itself shows why Ineos's decision needs to be thorough. It needs to be deliberate. It can't react to these games that oscillate between great performances and wild results and then heavy defeats and loads of shots conceded. They need a thorough, considered approach. That's what they've always said they'll do. And yes, these results will be informing opinions. I think the two this week, I think the Fulham game last month, these are games that have gone away that bring up the word unsustainable. Ten Hag might feel that he deserves a chance under a new structure. And to be honest, look, it's always been the structure that's been the problem at United, right? Whenever they've made managerial changes in the past, there's maybe been a short-term bounce, but it hasn't worked out in the long term. If you're going to finally change that structure, maybe there's an argument for keeping the manager. But he is, the performances that United are putting in, the lack of consistency isn't helping him. It isn't helping his cause whatsoever. And I think, look, that decision is going to be made in the weeks and months to come.
Let's bring Andy in on the conversation. One of our team of Liverpool writers here on The Athletic. Liverpool in action had a bit of a scare on Thursday night against Sheffield United, but came through it as people would have expected in the end. In terms of the feeling at Liverpool, I suppose you can contrast it to Manchester United and looking towards the end of the season and potential managerial change. We know that there's going to be managerial change at Liverpool with Jurgen Klopp leaving. Do you think that the performances are reflecting just that collective spirit that they need to get this title for him, and they will get the title for him?
I think it's definitely a big element of it. I think it helps that almost everyone has just got this same common goal. You know, you've not got the sort of the longer term future is for other people to deal with, and this set of players and this coaching staff is very much, we've got 8 league games left and potentially 5 Europa League games left. So that, you know, there's no, well, what are we going to do in the transfer market for Jürgen Klopp to think about in the summer? You know, what's the pre-season plans and all this type of stuff. He's just got a very common, you know, he's just got that one goal, two if you want to talk about both trophies. But obviously the league is the one that I think Liverpool fans, it's fair to say, would want a lot more than the Europa League. And yet it's brought that sense of, you know, this one's for the boss type thing. And we've heard a lot of talk from Liverpool players about the last dances, that, you know, that quote has been doing the rounds again. It's winning it for him. I think that's what it feels like. While, you know, Klopp has been sensational, it would almost feel unfair, I think, for him to only have left with one Premier League title, given, you know, the battles that they've had with Man City and how competitive they've been against a team that, you know, is, you know, should in many other seasons would have wiped the floor with everybody. So I think it is that, and I think you can see that in the mentality of the players, and, you know, every setback, or pretty much every setback they've had this season, they've bounced back in, and go back to the comebacks, and it's seven in the Premier League so far this season where they've been a goal down and come from behind to win. And, you know, 12 months ago we were looking at this Liverpool side who, you know, that had gone, that had disappeared. So the change has been, you know, dramatic and incredible in a way of how quickly it's changed. But yeah, it's a united group that you know, we're all pointing in one direction. And that's, I think Trent Alexander-Arnold spoke recently and sort of said that once Klopp had shared the news with the team, Van Dijk was very much, you know, the captain, and he took control and sort of basically said, we've got to do this for him. And you can just see that in the energy, and the crowd feel the same. Everyone's pulling in that direction to try and get, you know, send Jürgen Klopp off in the perfect way.
Just a quick word on Mo Salah. Obviously, there was a little bit of unrest, minor unrest, you know, walking back to the bench against Sheffield United, not looking happy, not necessarily looking directly at Jürgen Klopp, etc., etc. People make more of it than maybe we should. But it did sort of make sense, didn't it? He scored three in his last four. You've got a big game against Manchester United coming up, who he loves scoring against, 13 in his last 10, I think it is. So it was the pragmatic choice from Jürgen Klopp to do that, or do you think it was maybe a little bit too antagonistic?
I don't think Salah was having his best game. I think it's fair to say, and I think Klopp's, but I mean, the substitutions that Klopp made certainly made a positive impact. You know, even though Salah, he didn't go away for the international break, I think he still is building up his match sharpness and you know, trying to find his rhythm again. So I think there's a couple of elements. I think the timing of it, I think it was, you know, it was just after Sheffield United had got back in the game. So I think when you take your big, what you would deem your best attacker, your best player off, when there's a bit of peril, it's always gonna create a bit of, what's he doing here? Is this the right move? Because if any Liverpool player who's most likely to break a deadlock or that was on the pitch at that point, it would have been Salah. We saw it literally days ago against Brighton, where he provides the winner in the 2-1, even though he did need about 14 million shots to get to that point. But yeah, I think it was one of them. And I think Salah's reaction is not a surprise, because essentially Mo Salah hates being substituted regardless of what the game state is, whether it's, you know, whether it's 5-0 down or 7-0 up. He doesn't want to come off the pitch regardless. So it doesn't surprise me. And I think he wants to win this league title as much as anyone. And I think when, you know, that was his influence gone, he wasn't going to be able to affect the game anymore by coming off. And it's potentially a very congested fixture for Liverpool. And given the injury crisis that they're just about to come out of, you know, they don't want anyone going back into it and creating those problems for them. So, yeah, I think it was one of them. When Liverpool win, so it doesn't feel as big. If Liverpool had drawn 1-1, you know, I think there'd be a lot more question marks about why you wouldn't have left Mo Salah on the pitch. But ultimately, Liverpool did get the job done, and that was the main thing. And I think the import, while his reaction wasn't great, I think there's been a few clips doing the rounds on Twitter and stuff of when McAllister scores the goal, and he's celebrating as much as anybody on the bench. So I think that just shows how much it means to him. And it certainly, you know, it does keep a little bit fresher for Sunday. So, you know, hopefully Liverpool see the benefits of that. And as you say, he certainly loves playing against Manchester United. So hopefully he continues that run and makes it look even better.
Alexis McAllister is in great form. We obviously saw a great goal against Sheffield United, John. 5 goals in his last 7. How vital is he to Liverpool's operation at the moment?
Yeah, really important. We've just made a video actually on Liverpool's wide triangle on the right off the back of Liam Tharm's piece in The Athletic. Back when Liverpool last won the title in 2019, it was the same sort of triangle being used, albeit with very different players in that triangle. But yeah, one of those players now is Alexis McAllister, who's just pulling the strings, providing passes that can go out wide in behind, as we saw for the winner against Brighton as well. So yeah, he's become a really, really important player. No one really knew what to expect from Liverpool this season in terms of the fact that they just basically renewed their midfield completely. McAllister coming in on a fee that we believe to be around 35 million. And that fee just looks incredible from this point of the season, right? So yeah, he's been both important, not just in terms of scoring the goal that he scored last night, obviously, but actually becoming quite a creative player for Liverpool, who actually at times I thought struggled a little bit creatively last night in terms of being able to generate dangerous chances in the box. But when you have a player like him who can just sort of pop up in the half space, play those really damaging passes in behind to the attacking players Liverpool have, then yeah, really, really nice prospect for any manager to have available to them.
Mark, I wanted to get your take on the fixture sort of history between these two sides. In the last couple of seasons, 2 out of the last 3, Liverpool have won pretty handsomely, a 5-0 and a 4-2. But on the whole, United, over the last 10 games, have actually had a better record against Liverpool in games at Old Trafford. So I suppose it sort of reinforces the fact that whatever's happening, however chaotic it may seem at United, the standards or the determination will certainly be raised to get a result in this one.
Absolutely. You know, this is the one game that everybody looks out for every season. And if you think back now to the corresponding fixture, last season, right at the very start of Ten Hag's tenure, he'd obviously lost the first 2 games against Brighton and Brentford. It was really definitely not the first time, but like there was a lot of protest essentially against the Glazers, is what I'm trying to say. And that really kicked off from there, this whole process that we've been on over the last 18 months. It has eventually ended up with Ineos taking a minority stake and Jim Ratcliffe being in the building. That day, the atmosphere was one of the better ones that I've experienced at Old Trafford. It only really topped by the FA Cup quarterfinal a couple of weeks ago against exactly the same opponents. Ten Hag has 2 Old Trafford wins against Liverpool in his 2 Old Trafford games against Liverpool. And yeah, you're right. For all that we talk about this chaotic style and, you know, how fast and direct both teams like to play, I think that does lend itself sometimes to extreme results. The 4-3 that we witnessed a few weeks ago. You know what to expect from these games is what I'm saying. It's always fast. It's always frenetic. It's always direct. I think there's a similarity between the two sides in the way that they approach the game, that they want to play in a transitional style. Now, that's not to say that United are anywhere near as good at Liverpool at counter-pressing, at defending counter-attacks. But this is a fixture that for a long time had a reputation for producing pretty bad and boring games. I think that's changed in recent years. And I think that's down to the two managers.
Let's get our predictions then. Mark, we'll start with you.
Oh, I don't know. 8-7. What? No, I think, look, seriously, like, it's tough. I think United will give them a game, but it's difficult to go into it thinking that there's going to be any kind of positive result for Ten Hag. So I'd say, like, 3-1 Liverpool.
Okay. Andy?
3-1 was going to be mine as well. I hope Liverpool have learned the lessons from the other week. Because if they haven't, it's just going to make me even angrier. Because it still really annoys me, that game. Every time someone mentions it, I just get really annoyed. So I really hope they don't make me feel like that again.
And John?
Yeah, I don't think they're going to make the same mistakes again. I think it's pretty unlikely. So yeah, 2-0. 2-0 to Liverpool.
You do it with such disdain. Thank you, John. Let's head from the top to the bottom.
V This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the team's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham, all new, Thursdays on FX, stream on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Okay, so at the bottom of the Premier League, meanwhile, this is how it looks. Bottom three are familiar friends: Sheffield United with 15 points, Burnley with 19, Luton with 22, and then above the line, Nottingham Forest with 25. Big win for them against Fulham this week, and then Everton with 26 points. And they got a vital draw at Newcastle on Tuesday, but they've got a winless run of 13. Their longest since 1957. They're still 4 points clear of the relegation zone, but they still have that second potential profit and sustainability rules deduction, that catchy phrase that we always have to use, hanging over them. Mark, I wanted to get your take on how you view the bottom of the table, because you're sort of used to hanging out with teams in loftier heights, you know, Man City and Manchester United.
Don't speak too soon then.
yeah. They are, United are safe now though, aren't they?
I think so.
Yeah, just about. In terms of, you know, Everton, at the moment, effectively, they're just being saved by the fact that it is a substandard bottom three. And I was looking at last season after 30 games, the bottom three were Southampton, Leicester and Forest. And they all had more points than Luton do at this stage of the season last season. So Southampton had 23, Leicester had 25, Forest had 27. Everton, the last two seasons, they finished 16th, 17th. Do you feel just the sort of the way that the footballing gods pan out, that this is the season that they finish below the line? Or do you just think, well, no, it's unfortunately for anyone that wants them to go down, it's just that bottom three are going to save them?
Well, I think the point about the bottom three is a good one, an interesting one, but I would also kind of flip it a little bit and to say that substandard bottom three being kept in the race by all these points deductions that we're seeing, right? Because look, if Everton had the points that they originally got, or they originally won, if Forest had them, then I think we'd be talking about a bit of a foregone conclusion. And look, I think before these points deductions came in, I remember around October, November time, there were pieces knocking around, and I largely agreed with them that we already knew who the three relegated clubs were going to be, and that this was probably one of the worst relegation races, as much as it can ever be a race, that we'd seen in the Premier League. Equally, I think last season's Leeds, Leicester, Southampton, less so Southampton, but pretty competitive teams who you know, were in a bad spell, a bad moment last year, but who, and as we've seen from the way that the Championship's gone this season, who, you know, are Premier League teams in stature and in quality of the squad. So I think comparing the two is a little difficult. I would say that, like, from Everton's case, sometimes people think, like, sometimes a club needs a good relegation. I'm not saying that that's the case with Everton, but the way that the club has been managed and the way that the club has been run over the years, you cannot take the type of financial risks and make the type of financial decisions that they've made and leave yourself in a position that puts you in this much jeopardy on a regular basis without ever being in danger of falling under that dotted line, as we say. So it might be the case that this is the season. And I think, look, full credit to Luton and the way that they've played. They've really made a fist of it. I think Burnley's form has improved in recent weeks. But points deductions aside, I think that the bottom three will probably stay the bottom three come the end of the season.
Now, on Tuesday, we saw Dominic Calvert-Lewin score. It wasn't the most convincing penalty, but I think, as we always say, on a human level, it was great to see someone who's been going through a wretched run of form, 23 games without a goal, scoring. And hopefully this will now give him confidence. And you see him as the first name on the team sheet now?
Yeah, I think it's worth saying that Everton do have a finishing issue. So they, with all of the strikers they've played regularly this season, they are underperforming their expected goals. So Beto, Youssef Chimiti, who's come on at times as well, and Dominic Calvert-Lewin, they're all putting up around the same amount of expected goals per 90. So, you know, it's much of a muchness in terms of the output that they are generating for Sean Dyche. But I think what's super interesting about this is that actually if you look at Calvert-Lewin's expected goals per 90 across his whole career, this season is the season where he's put up the most in a per 90 sense. So it's 0.54 expected goals per 90 this season, which is, yeah, it's higher than any other season that he's had at Everton in the Premier League. So these things are always come down to confidence. If you're getting into the right sorts of areas, then you are going to be more likely than not to score more goals. He's clearly doing that. So the question is whether or not this penalty, as you're talking about it, is going to give him the confidence then to start putting up actual goal figures to match his expected numbers.
Pop your Burnley hat on for us, if you don't mind, Andy, because at the moment, whisper it quietly, but Burnley are coming into some sort of form, relatively speaking. They've not lost in four. They beat Brentford. They got points against Wolves, Chelsea and West Ham. I know everyone sort of goes on about Luton. And yes, obviously, I have to put the disclaimer in here that I'm a Watford fan. But they are, yes, the closest to getting out of it. But they're in wretched form. They've lost seven out of their last nine, only one win in 13. But it looks as if Burnley are the side that might be able to pop their heads above the line. Are you getting that feeling too, or am I misreading it and they're actually still rubbish?
Well, four on the bounce is unbeaten is like dreamland. I don't think Burnley had got two games unbeaten on the bounce at any point during the season. So this is just incredible stuff. I think it does almost come down to what happens on Saturday before we can say yes or no. Now, there has been belief building that, you know, Mission Impossible might actually be possible because it's looked so unlikely throughout pretty much the entirety of the season. But when Forrest got that points deduction and Burnley picked up that win against Brentford, the gap was down to sort of 4 points. And suddenly you looked at it and thought, you know, there is a possibility. And then they get a very, very unlikely point at Chelsea. And we all know how inconsistent Chelsea can be. But to be down to 10 men and 1-0 down, you know, that largely this season, that would have meant defeat for Burnley. But so they're showing that the character and the fight and the spirit that the company's been talking about all season, and they're actually sort of getting points now. The problem is it feels like it's just a little bit too late. But they are trending in the right direction. You know, they lost to Bournemouth at home, but they should have won it. They had 75% possession with a better team for the large portion of it. You know, go away to West Ham, go two up, concede, you know, in another time, which again is one of those you look at and think that 2 points could have been really handy. Then they do beat Brentford, you know, and get a point against Chelsea and Wolves. So the signs are right. The problem is that it could have been, you know, it would have been helpful if it was 5 games earlier or 10 games earlier. They'd be right in there, and I know company would tell you that refereeing decisions have certainly have a part to play in that. You know, there's been quite a few high profile ones against Burnley, but ultimately they haven't been good enough and sort of deserve to be where they are. The fact that they've got a fighting chance is a bit mad at this point because the points total later on, they shouldn't have any.
Right, let's get our predictions for this one, starting with you, Andy.
So I'm going to keep my Burnley hat on, even though Burnley played Everton twice this season and got completely bullied by them. So I'm going to go with 2-1 Burnley. I don't know how they're going to do it, but they're going to find a way.
John?
2-0 Everton.
Brilliant. Okay. And Mark?
I was going to say the same, so I'm going to go... I've got 2-1 Everton, I think, but defensively, they've been fairly good this season, I want to say. I don't know if Johnny would agree, but they've been okay. So, yeah, 2-0 was my preferred scoreline, but I got 2-1.
Okay. We shall see.
Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point-of-sale system you can trust, or is it a... real POS. You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/theathletic.
Right, let's get a quick word on some of the other key games this weekend. Mark, Palace against Manchester City. City aren't going to slip up against Palace, are they? Palace are even more beige than they were under Roy Hodgson at the moment, aren't they?
I'll leave that for Palace aficionados to decide. But I think that, look, I mean, the reverse fixture at the Etihad was 2-2. And it was a game that was one that City kind of threw away, really, rather than, I would say, Palace played well enough to get the point. But City definitely threw it away, the last minute penalty, Michael Olise. And it's, yeah, the type of opponent that City are prone to throwing a result in sometimes. I remember that game particularly because it was Foden, actually, who came away with the ball very late and lost it. And then Palace went up the other end and won the penalty. Now, watching that game against Villa the other night, Foden obviously scoring a hat-trick, being at the centre of absolutely everything. And I thought it was interesting as well that that was probably one of the better City performances that I've seen recently. And it was a game where they were quite open on the counter-attack. You know, we think of Guardiola as someone who's very, you know, sets his team up to defend those sorts of situations. And don't get me wrong, they were still. But they were more open to it than usual, certainly compared to the game that we saw last Sunday. So I just wonder whether there's a smidgen of a chance of a Crystal Palace counter-attack slicing right through them and maybe making this one difficult. But that's hard to see, really, because, like I say, City were in imperious form the other night. And if we always talk about these runs that they go on and these wins that they keep picking up, if they're going to go on one, this might be the start of it, looking at the way that they played the other night.
And one other quick word on Luton, who obviously they're trying to get out of the relegation zone. We were talking about Everton earlier on and Burnley, etc. But they're on a poor run. But I suppose they would, in a sort of a traditional way, look at Bournemouth as a possible 3 points. But this isn't the Bournemouth of old. This is the Bournemouth under Andoni Iraola, isn't it, John? And this is the Bournemouth that are just 4 points off seventh. This is the Bournemouth that may well have the manager of the season at their club, is it not?
Look, you all laughed at me, but I have to say, you aren't laughing now, are you? It's been incredible watching the turnaround at Bournemouth this season under Iraola. And actually, if you look at a rolling XG chart, you can almost see the moment at which the Bournemouth players started understanding what Andoni Iraola wanted them to do, because they went from putting up some very unimpressive numbers across the first 9 games of the season to actually now putting up around, well, form that would put them ahead of Manchester United in the table and have them pushing up towards European Champions League spot. So, yeah, it's been incredible to see that turnaround happen. And will be very interesting, I think, to see what happens next season when he's given another pre-season to work with the players, chance to bring in more players that of the profile that he thinks can improve the way that he's playing. And then balanced off, of course, with the fact that now analysts at all the clubs have had a chance to see what his team are up to and find ways of maybe trying to stymie that in some way. So, yeah, Bournemouth, really, really fun to watch at the moment, playing quite a different style of football to a lot of the football that we see working in the Premier League right now. And, yeah, I'm quite excited to see what happens in the following season. This has been a good taster of what we can expect from Andoni Iraola. It'd be nice to see like the ceiling, how high that ceiling is next season.
Right, that is all we've got time for. Really appreciate your time, Mark. Thanks for coming on.
No problem. Cheers.
And to Andy.
No problem. Thank you.
And John, once again, good to see you.
Yeah, I always love to spend an hour of my day off with you, Adam. It's great.
Excellent. You can come round anytime. Thank you to you all. Hope you have a good weekend. Thanks very much for listening. Take care.
The Athletic.